Hi, I'm Meredith, and I'm in your corner. I'm here to help you transform from a teacher who feels overwhelmed, frazzled, stressed, burned out, exhausted, and chaotic, to an educator who feels organized, focused, streamlined, balanced, energized, and calm every single day. That's what you deserve. I help teachers just like you get freed to do what you actually love, teach, so the next generation gets our very best. How can I help you today? Visit my website, thetransformedteacher.com, to learn more about how I can help your school and the teachers you work with. And as I always like to say, because I don't think you can ever hear it enough, if nobody else tells you today, you rock. You're standing in front of a full class of students and you're wearing nothing but your underwear. In my fourth year of teaching, that dream nearly became a reality, although I'm not sure if that kind of mortifying dream would have been worse than what really happened. It was a regular Tuesday in November, just 3 days before my 32nd birthday. My afternoon class of 12th graders was getting ready to start Act 2 of Macbeth. They say if you say Macbeth 3 times, it's bad luck. Maybe that's why it happened. It would take one student 2 minutes to say 2 sentences from the play, and his time was one of the fastest in the class. He had pensive, deep blue eyes and was one of the kindest students I'd ever taught. He also had autism and loved playing the trumpet. "Thank you for the lesson," he'd say at the end of each day. He had been in my freshman class my second year of teaching. It had been an honors class. Now, 3 years later, he was in my senior class. It was not an honors class. It was a class where the dynamic was very, I'm rubbing my chin to try to find the precise word and we'll settle on interesting. My principal had delicately told me during an observation early in the school year that I might be, quote unquote, walking a fine line. He had always been very supportive and appeared to see only the best in me. So it took me a while to realize that he didn't really mean that phrase as a compliment. At the time, I thought he meant it was a skill I had. After all, to walk a fine line would be like walking a tightrope, right? That took talent, patience, and precision, didn't it? So wasn't walking a fine line a good thing? I neglected to realize that walking a tightrope increased one's chances for falling far and falling hard. My principal had explained, I mean, it's great that they feel so comfortable in your class. That's good. You seem to have a great relationship with them. But it seems like your control is just a little bit too loose. You're just walking a fine line. Then he added graciously, I don't know, maybe it'll work. You know the class better than I do. I just don't want you to have to stress out about it. A couple of months later, I had come to tire of walking that fine line. The only thing that was like a tightrope was my patience. And on this November day, I'd had enough of this class. There was Danny, who had his ears pierced with circular black discs that widened his earlobes. He was always laughing and talking while I was talking. There was Courtney, a dancer who sat quietly in the front and tried to pretend like she wasn't there. There was Chris, who was cheerful and very sweet, but easily distracted by Danny, as well as Keaton, Zion, Trayshawn, and Matthew, who always came in together. I taught at a magnet school, and the 6 football players had been bussed in from Northern High School and wore matching khakis and white polo shirts, their school uniform. They carried themselves very slowly and deliberately. We usually had mutual respect. Then there were Kaiesia and Destiny, who came in late every single day. Destiny was always high. On this particular day, they came in 10 minutes late. We'd already been working on our journals. I say we because I wrote with them. More on this momentarily. When the girls came in late, they muttered something to Keaton, and the quiet journal writing was immediately disrupted. I sighed, then asked Kaiesia, Keaton, and Destiny to work outside. My classroom was in a trailer, so that meant they would have to work outdoors. Soon I heard the 3 of them again raising their voices and getting off task, and I knew I'd have to go out there to do some redirecting. I jotted down my last thoughts in my journal, left it on the lectern, then went outside to check on them. 3 minutes later, I was engrossed in a motivational speech to them about the importance of trying harder, as they looked off in the distance with their eyes glazed over. At this point, you may be making a mental checklist of all of the teaching mistakes this story has thus far illuminated, and you would be absolutely correct in doing so, but I haven't even gotten to the most egregious mistake yet. In the middle of my motivational speech, Kaeja suddenly interrupted, declaring that she needed to go inside to get her purse. She, of course, was just tired of listening to my lecture. When she came back out, within a few moments, she glared at me. The malevolent look was nothing new from her, but she seemed especially put out. Then, the other student came out very distraught, shaking his head and covering his ears. "I don't want to go back in there," he muttered. "What is it?" I asked, concerned that maybe someone had teased him. "People are being mean. It's bad. I'm not going back in there." Well, that was it. Nobody teased him on my watch, or even on my lack thereof. I asked Kaeja to get back to work, but she held her hand up in front of my face. "No, you already done said I make you nuts, so I don't want to hear anything else from you," she retorted. She made quotation marks with her fingers when she said the word nuts. What could she have been talking about? I heard a loud noise just before I walked back in the room. When I came back in, the class was silent. Some were just looking down. Nobody looked at me. "Well, what is it?" I asked Courtney. She sat with Jacob closest to the front, a couple of feet from my desk. Her mouth was open, and her face looked like she had just seen an iguana flying an airplane. "Somebody just read your journal out loud," she finally spat out. My heart dropped to my toenails, and my face flushed, likely a nice shade of watermelon with a few tinges of eggplant. "What?" With my eyes about to jump out of their sockets, I turned to the class, looking simultaneously for any sign of either mutiny or loyalty from any of them, searching their faces for clues about who the perpetrator could be. Keaton? No, he had been outside. Danny? Maybe. Matthew? No, he was too shy and hung on every word I said. Chris? Possible, but doubtful. Of course, this journal wouldn't be full of my everyday mundane thoughts, such as how much I hated folding laundry or a list of frozen food items I needed to purchase from the grocery store on my way home. This journal was full of my darkest secrets and details about intimate relationships, all of my self-doubt, all of my emotional problems, all of my messy, uncooked, slimy, stinky feelings. It would have been less embarrassing if I could have just wet my pants in front of all of them. And to top it all off, on this current day's page, I had written, "I am so tired. I just want to go home. Kaeja and Destiny are late again, and they are now getting everyone distracted. They drive me nuts." So, all of those personal feelings and thoughts were now out there, flying around this classroom and forever changing the natural energy of the hour and a half that these young people and I would spend together. I had myself to blame for leaving my journal in full view on the front lectern, but they were to blame too. I threw up my hands and said, "Well, this takes the cake. I give up. That you guys would do this is just incredible. I'm in shock. I'm flabbergasted. This is about as low as you could go. Congratulations." My passive-aggressive guilt trip seemed to have no effect. Nobody laughed. Nobody moved. I didn't know what to do except call the school counselor, Mitzi. I stepped outside with my body half in and half out the door so that the students wouldn't see my tears or hear my voice shaking. But really, why did I care anymore? Mitzi got someone to cover my class, and I went to her office and bawled. When I was finished bawling, she called in Kaeja and Destiny and spoke to them in my defense, but they were even more disrespectful than ever. The assistant principal then called me in with Kaeja and Destiny. She said to the girls, "I know y'all are mad right now, but you're gonna have so many teachers throughout your whole life, and you know some of them care, and you know some of them really don't. Now, you got one who cares, and that's what it comes down to. Whatever she said seemed to appease them. Still, I took the next 2 days off, enjoyed my birthday, and didn't come back until I was 33 years old, which was the following week. Upon my return, the awkwardness was palpable. I merely went through the motions with the class. I gave no sign of caring about them and offered no emotional availability whatsoever. I was basically just a warm body. "Can I play Macduff in the last act?" Danny pleaded at the beginning of class. I just shrugged. "Sure, whatever," I replied, not looking up. Later in the week, in the computer lab, I made my routine check of their research paper checklist. When it was Keaton's turn, he came up to my desk, but didn't go away after I had put the requisite check in the box on his sheet, showing that he'd completed his 10 note cards. Instead, he slid his chair back and put his elbows on his knees, looking up at me. "So, when you gonna come back?" he asked, almost accusingly. "I am back," I replied, not understanding. "I've been back for 3 days." "I mean, really back," he responded. "When you gonna come back? When you gonna come back and be our teacher?" His big brown eyes widened, then twinkled just a bit. And I sighed, and I couldn't help but crack a smile. And that's when I realized it would have to stop being about me. And from that point on, I decided to relax. When I stopped to notice, there were actually no longer any discipline issues with that class. There was quiet, calm respect. We worked together. When they finished their final exams, I let them play some of Tupac's music in my class. And they were surprised to learn I knew all the words to California Love. Our humanity was now common, at the same level. A day I never thought I'd ever recover from turned out to be some pretty good fertilizer. 4 years later, my birthday week was a bit less dramatic. One of my eighth graders asked, "Miss Newland, what you want for your birthday?" "Tell you what, I'm gonna double your salary." And I replied, "Oh, is that so? That sounds nice." The student said, "Yep, my dad sells insurance. I'm gonna make it happen." Later in the day, another student asked, "What you want for your birthday, Miss Newland?" I replied, "Well, I just found out someone's gonna double my salary for my birthday." Her reply, "Oh, well, I can't do that." Then she appeared to realize something and said brightly, "But I could bring you a donut." She made me laugh, and then she laughed too. And that kind of moment, that simple little glimmer of light that ever so quietly radiates right smack in the middle of my heart, that's what I consider one of the many captured fireflies of teaching. That's when I feel like a success. Those moments can be a long time coming sometimes. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Transformed Teacher Podcast. I can't wait to be back with you next week for the next episode, where we'll find out more together about how you can get on the road to thriving. You are amazing, and I believe in you. And if nobody else tells you today, you rock.